I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, oh, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. My producers, as always, are Patrick Antonetti and Sean Cherry. This week, it is a regular on this podcast, though it's been a little bit since he's been on. John Orand is the fine Sports Business Daily media writer, and also obviously works for the Sports Business Journal, has a terrific media newsletter that comes out if you're a subscriber to that publication. And John has certainly had a nice couple weeks, broken a lot of interesting stories, and I am pleased that he is joining me today. No two openings, John. We're going straight into this podcast. Usually, you know I give you a nice little opening at the top, and then I say, all right, back in the studio, here's John Orand. But today, we're just starting right away, John. There's much to do.
Let's get right to it.
All right, first off, I think you broke the story. If you didn't break the story, you were one of the early people breaking the story, and that's NBCSN. NBC Universal deciding to fold NBCSN at the end of 2021, taking those assets, those sports assets like NASCAR and Premier League and hockey, of course, placing them on the USA Network, NBC, and of course, Peacock, their streaming service. So let's start here, John. Why did this happen?
There are couple things at play here. A lot of the stories right afterwards, we're talking about Peacock, because a lot of these sports are going to head over to Peacock. And if you look at what Disney is doing with Disney Plus and by extension ESPN Plus, and if you look at the sort of how NBC Sports is pushing Peacock, it's sort of, you know, the future of TV is here. And it's streaming, and you can see sort of what's happening with that. And I think that's a logical way to look at this, and I think that certainly is one aspect of this. But something that a lot of people have missed is that the NHL is going to find windows on USA Network. And EPL, the English Premier League, is going to find windows on USA Network. And what we have here is sort of like a – like almost like a retrenchment of the bundle. Like you're seeing these big media companies that are trying to figure out how to create a new bundle that's based on live sports, because live sports is really, it's the only thing that's holding the cable bundle together still, which is something I've been saying for the last 5 years. You know, it's not new, but you're seeing sort of a retrenchment of this. So they're trying to create almost like a TNT type of a situation there. And you're going to have less channels with more sports that are going to be part of that bundle. So part of this to me is they're trying to make sure that the bundle lasts for as long as it possibly lasts, because it is a lucrative way to make money for you know, NBC, ESPN, Fox, all of these guys.
So John, if I'm just a fan, sort of explain to me why this wouldn't be the case. I'm a sports fan and I see that NBCSN like is the second or third most watched cable sports network, which I think they put out not too long ago either, like their average viewership in prime time or their average viewership in daytime. But I think they were number two on one of them. So, you know, you look at that and how, I don't know what the cost is exactly. You probably do. Obviously, NBCSN gets a certain figure from the cable carriers. It's probably under a dollar, but you know, you still times that by all the cable subscribers, and it's a multi-million dollar business. So, like, why would you shut that down? Is it truly more profitable to shut that down and to place your inventory on places like USA Network, et cetera, than to keep what, at least in theory, look to be an existing successful cable sports channel?
Yeah, I wouldn't describe it as more profitable to do that, but I think you could also say, like, you know, God, the Pony Express is still working. Why don't we continue to use the Pony Express in the last couple of days? Cord cutting is happening. And Comcast is a huge company that's overseeing this sort of declining asset. And so the question that all these media companies have right now is, how far do you want to sit on top of a declining asset versus trying to this is where the Peacock comes in, versus trying to turbocharge the streaming asset and trying to get that going like as quickly as they can. And I think that's where the decision really is made. So the question here is, like, so you say if you're a sports fan, how do you view this? I don't look at it like that. I'm like, if you're an NHL fan, you're pretty much okay because you're going to see your games on NBC, the broadcast network. You're going to see your games on USA, and you'll see some on Peacock as well. It's sort of these, Premier League lacrosse, some of these really smaller ones that all of a sudden are going to be...
The dog show, right?
Yeah, they're going to be losing linear TV. They're going to be going to streaming, and then boy, it's going to become really, really niche. Those are the sports that are really going to be hurt.
All right, so two things here. I think you've sort of answered it, but let me ask it directly. So you have confidence that significant inventory still will go on USA Network as opposed to significant important inventory all going to Peacock for NBC to try to build that up and obviously get people to pay for their streaming service?
Yeah, Peacock's getting significant inventory, but the plan is that they're gonna load up USA with that because USA is much more valuable with live sports programming than USA. In fact, is probably going to get lower ratings, but it's going to be better. It's going to be more profitable for them to have a hockey game on there than sort of a ninth Law and Order rerun.
Obviously, one of the most important questions here with this move is what happens to the NHL or what's the NHL's thinking in terms of its upcoming U.S. Media rights deal? And I know you're on the record as saying you think NBC Universal retains with Fox. Lee Burke, who we both respect and talk to a lot, who's a longtime industry expert, has consulted with all these companies. He believes ESPN will get half that package because of the existing tech relationship with BAM, et cetera. What's your thought now? Like, the NHL obviously was given the heads up, I'm sure, by NBC Universal about this, but what do you think this move off of NBCSN means for the NHL's media rights deal coming up?
The guy that's running the NHL negotiations, Gary Bettman, he was there back in 2005 or 2006 when ESPN turned its back on the NHL. They were in the middle of a strike, and NBC gave them a lifeline. And they've been, this sounds like PR speak, so I apologize, but they've been great partners for the past, 14, 15 years. And that means a lot in the sports business. Relationships matter in the sports business. The NHL likes NBC. NBC likes the NHL. I find it really hard, even giving up NBCSN, I find it really hard to picture that relationship fracturing going forward. I think they're going to find a couple of really good windows on USA. They're going to get a lot of windows on Peacock. They're going to get a lot of promotion. They're going to be on the broadcast network. I think that's almost certain to stick with NBC. The NHL has gone on the record. They want to split their package. They want to pull in one or maybe two other media companies. ESPN and Fox are the logical ones. I still think Fox is going to be the one that's going to come and get it, but Lee's a smart guy, and a lot of other people believe that ESPN is going to be the one in there to get it. I think it'll be Fox. I think Fox has they've gone after a sort of a live event strategy, and the NHL fits right in with that. I can see them coming and getting it. And then there's one other package, a streaming package. Maybe that could go to ESPN Plus. Maybe that could go to Amazon. Maybe that could go to one of the big tech companies for a cheaper price than the NFL would be getting. Amazon's out there, Google's out there, ESPN Plus is out there. DAZN is still sort of nosing around here and there. So who knows where that could go? But the only certainty that I see is at NBC. I'm virtually certain it's going to keep it.
Yeah, I agree with you on the NBC part. It'll be interesting to see what happens with that second package. I also think the NHL is in a better position than people think. That was a very hot property prior to COVID, and I think entities are going to look long-term on that. It's got good demos, young stars, et cetera.
Yeah, let me just say I'm very, very bullish on the NHL. I think the NHL is going to get a windfall in terms of a rights fee increase.
We agree. Yeah, I agree. I think it's the demos on that sport are very good for network, especially streaming.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
All right, let's move to Meadowlark, which is the company that John Skipper and Dan Le Batard have formed. I mean, essentially, John, at this point, you're almost the spokesperson. You're the Chris LaGentile for this entity, given how many stories you've broken. Send my best to Skipper, John.
Open for business here, Richard.
Yeah. You're Triple H. What's best for business? All right, so let me ask you a general question here, because you know, to let the audience know, and tell me if I'm wrong here, John, what Skipper and Le Batard are going to do is they're making an attempt to get what they consider best-in-class sports content. Best-in-class, of course, is objective, but, you know, I mean, high-end, smart people doing smart content. Selling them to third parties so that they're positioning themselves as what I think Skipper called the supplier of choice. And they're looking to raise $10, $15, $20 million. If I'm wrong about that, John, correct me. But I think that's sort of the blueprint here. So let me ask you a general question. Given if that is the philosophy or the framework, how successful can that kind of company be?
You know, I don't know. How's that for an answer? Next question. I think that Skipper and Le Batard are taking a look at what Bill Simmons created and how he sort of turned that into, to say, a tidy profit. You know, what did he sell the ringer for to Spotify?
$200 million reported. Yeah. That's not tidy, John. That's a major profit.
Tidy, very tidy. He's looking at Barstool Sports and sort of what they created as a pure content play. And the valuation now is sort of through the roof. And he has in Le Batard, a key person who has a rabid fan base, you know, almost Barstool-esque. So his bet is that, you know, he'll be able to sell Le Batard's show somewhere, like a serious type of place, use that money with added investments to start getting a lot of the people that have been let go by ESPN, let go by Fox. I mean, there's a lot of really good talent in sports media that's out on the street right now. And he's going to get a lot of those people to come in and tell stories and create pretty close to what he created when he was at ESPN in terms of like an undefeated type of publication. And so his bet is that there's a blueprint that's already out there for starting a content company and being able to see the valuations on that go through the roof. And Skipper feels like he already created that at ESPN. He already created that once. And that with Le Batard as an anchor, it'll be easy enough to recreate again.
So here's my question. Like, first of all, I have absolutely no doubt that he'll be able to sell the Le Batard show, or maybe shows, plural, because obviously they have a couple other shows.
That's the easiest part of this. Yeah,
totally. Easy. Yeah. And so one of these things you always need is you do need an anchor that makes money. You know, Barstool has like Part of My Take and Call Me Daddy and these other podcasts that make a fortune. I think seven figures, basically. And so you have to have that base. You know, Simmons has his podcast and I don't know the enough of all the Ringer, other Ringer podcasts that are mega hits, Russillo's podcast. But the point is, the Ringer had at least one existing podcast that obviously is a cash cow. And so Skipper will have that with Lebatard, however he ends up selling that. The real question to me on this is, and by the way, I don't know the answer either, is can you then, if you bring in, let's say, like a Jamel Hill or, you know, the people that Skipper and Lebatard have worked with in the past and really like, you know, Michael Smith or Michelle Beadle. I'm just sort of just naming names here. There's no doubt that they can create good content. Like, that's not really the question for me, John. The question is, can they create content that people will pay a lot of money for or pay money for that's a differentiator in the marketplace versus what is already existing? And that's like where the money, that's the money. That's the ball game. And I don't know the answer to that. It's not that I don't think they can create good content. In fact, I'm positive they do. It's a question of who are they going to sell it to? And will the sellers pay premium for that? You know, that's the question, I think.
Yeah. And I think you answered it in your intro where, you know, look, the Ringer has great content, I think. But the star of the Ringer is Simmons and Simmons's podcast, and it always has been. And it's sort of I think, you know, Barstool. You mentioned, you know, pardon my take. That was the original one. You need that one anchor, and you can sort of build and draft off of that. And that's where they're viewing the market right now.
Let me ask you one more question on this, and then we'll move on. There's a lot of there's a lot of right center. Or, you know, right wing thought leaders who will say all of sports is left leaning and nobody needs any more progressive sports content. I actually might argue that a lot of sports content, like certainly if you think about it with ESPN and Fox Sports, is far more center-based than anything else. It's not like ESPN is doing 24/7 social justice programming. So my question is, John, do you think there's a market for an entity, if Lebatard and Skipper wanted to go for this, where it's really progressive content, like they really do a lot of, you know, social justice and sports, politics and sports, institutional racism as it relates to sports. Like, do you see a market for that kind of content, or do you think that is covered in some forms already, whether it's the New York Times or the Washington Post, ESPN, The Athletic, et cetera?
Yeah, I think that there's a potential hole in the market where that can fit, but I don't think that I know that's not at all what Skipper wants to start. Skipper is very left leaning, as you know. Lebatard is certainly left leaning, and so, you know, if they're starting a content company, it's going to lean left. But I don't think that they're trying to start a progressive sports content company. I think that they want to tell stories, and they want to tell good stories. And they're going to bring on people like, if they bring on Jamel Hill, you know, she's not going to write a right wing column or do any right wing videos. That will be progressive. But I would imagine that they would bring in, they could easily bring in a, you know, somebody that leans a little bit more right. This is not a political thing at all to them. And when I first heard about this and talked to them about it, you know, I had heard that it was going to be, you know, a really politically progressive, you know, sports site. And they were like, no, it's not, they're not getting into politics. They might address politics just like Skipper's ESPN used to. So it's certainly going to lean left, but it's, nobody will ever read this and say like, oh, there's a political site.
All right. Interesting. I appreciate that. That's a good clarification for the audience. They'll be an interesting company, to watch for sure. And I think if they, I always sort of use wrestling parlance here, they should really try to position themselves as an underdog and not an overdog, because people always want to see an underdog type of company to succeed. This is where it frustrates the Chris LaPlacas, your buddy from ESPN, and, you know, the Josh Krulitzes of the world. They, once upon a time, they were the scrappy underdog from Bristol. And now, you know, they're the 2,000-pound giant. So you always want to position yourself as the underdog. All right, very quickly, John, on the Super Bowl, what kind of viewership do you think Chiefs-Bucks gets?
You know, Tom Brady being in it, is good. Patrick Mahomes being in it is it should work. I don't think that it's going to break any records. I expect it to be probably. Look, I always view Super Bowl viewership as you take a look at the. I hope this wasn't. You weren't expecting a quick answer on that, Richard. I apologize for this ramble, but I view the Super Bowl as a TV show, and you have the NFL playoffs as a TV show. It's like a lead into the Super Bowl. And if the playoffs are down, the Super Bowl is pretty much going to be down. If the playoffs are up, the Super Bowl is going to be up. And I haven't seen the final numbers from last weekend yet. They might be up.
I think we're looking in the four. I think we're looking in the 40 millions for both games,
which might be up like a tick. But you know, the earlier rounds were down about 7%. The regular season was down around 7%. If the Super Bowl comes in and that's down between 5% and 7%, you know, that wouldn't shock me. I think it might flirt with dropping below 100 million viewers for the first time. But that's sort of, I think that's sort of where we are right now as a. In terms of sports TV ratings, I don't think that's any reason for anybody to get, you know, to go nuts on this. I think that it could easily rebound in the next few years, but I just think that there's been if you look at the lead in programming and that's been down, it's hard to market and bring in new eyeballs. Tom Brady might be able to help that.
Yeah, if I remember last year, I have to like check. Like it was under 100, and then didn't like later on they got a rating, like a national rating, maybe that flipped it a little over 100. Is my memory right about this?
I forget. It was flirting back then with it. I think it was pretty solidly came over 100. They found a couple viewers somewhere in Georgia or something like that.
Yeah, I think if I remember right, it was maybe 100.4 or something like that. But the 2019 was under 100 million, so it's not, you know, we have seen it at least relatively, you know, in relative short years. Although before that, John, I think you got to go back to the last, you know, to the 2009 or something like that. So, you know, I don't expect to see anything close to the, you know, 114.4 million that we saw for Patriots Seattle. But man, I have to think Tom Brady going for a Super Bowl with the Bucs and Patrick Mahomes is going to leave you over 100 million. Obviously, there's a million other factors, as we all know. You know, if the weather's cold, that'll help. COVID has blown up everything. But even with less people watching sports in the COVID universe, I mean, I could be wrong, John, but my thought is that the Super Bowl would be one thing that maybe people do crave for sort of some normalcy, and maybe it does lead you to maybe some increased viewership than what we've seen, obviously, over the last couple months. But I don't know. I mean, honestly, it's a tough one to predict. I don't know.
Yeah, you know what's going to help to me is Tampa, I think, what is it, 22,000, 26,000? They're actually going to be fans in the stands. And I just have to say, watching the Green Bay game and hearing the fans, I forgot how much
it makes
I missed
a difference.
That. Like, you know, it just makes it a better TV product. It makes it more welcoming for me to tune into that game, you know, to watch. And so, you know, having the fans in the stands can help. There are a lot of things that are looking to look at there.
All right, let's finish up on two things. First, what's your sort of just initial read on the deal that the WWE has made with Peacock?
WWE basically had their WWE network. I think that they plateaued pretty quickly with that, and they were finding it difficult to grow that. I think that they didn't necessarily like owning their own network, so to speak. It's tougher than it looks, and so now. What Nick Khan has done, hard to think that he's not at CAA anymore, as often as we mentioned him on this pod. But what he's done is basically taken what, you know, is just kind of, you know, was not a growth engine for WWE and turned that into, you know, $1 billion over 5 years. And so he gets a nice little piece of that. And this, again, is NBC putting live events and putting a lot of content on Peacock. So like, if you're a WWE fan, you're going to subscribe to Peacock, and you're just going to see those numbers go up.
I think it's amazing for Peacock, by the way. I think that that is very valuable programming. Even that library of WWE to me is super valuable.
Totally. And Rick Cardella was saying he just wants to get people in there, because once you get in there, you're going to want to get in there to watch whatever wrestling programming there is. And then they're going to watch The Office, or they're going to watch something else, and they're going to stick around. And they sell advertising on Peacock, and that matters to them. So they want to hit as many different constituencies as possible. So it's perfect. I hate to say win-win, but I see it working for both.
All right, final two, John, because I'm going to get you out of here, because I know you have a very important meeting coming up.
Very important.
If the Tokyo Olympics is canceled, which, you know, feels like a 50-50 proposition, just giving what's happening with new variants and COVID and third and second waves. What's that mean for NBC Universal?
It's tough, man. It was tough just delaying it by a year. They sold, you know, their ad sales pre-COVID for the Olympics were running at record highs. And all of a sudden, like, it just got shut down. They had to start from scratch. More than ad sales, it's programming. It's sort of the amount of manpower and energy that's been put into coming up with a production plan around it all of a sudden kind of gets thrown by the wayside. It would be not devastating, but it would hurt NBC just to have that get canceled. And I can't see them pushing it. I don't know what any of the options are. So it would be a tough call to cancel it. I mean, to be honest, I don't see them canceling it. I just think there's too much money that's involved with this, and I just see the governments and the networks and the organizing committees all sort of getting together and trying to figure out something on this, because it would throw would be upheaval in terms of the rights fees.
Yeah, well, the organizing committee / IOC would in theory have to do a make good or give the money back to NBC and all the broadcasters around the world, which just seems inconceivable. So I'm with you. I think they would try to figure out something, although at a certain point, John, the calendar is the calendar, right? You know, you have an Olympic scheduled in 2022, and you have all these other events going on. So it's not an easy solution, basically.
No, it's a very hard solution, but I think you're going to see with some of the U.S. trials coming up, they're just going to try to do it differently. You know, you can't have proper trials, moving forward. And I think that they're going to try to do whatever they can. I mean, I just think about COVID in the Olympic Village, for goodness sakes. I don't know.
You can't have an Olympic.
I don't know what the solutions are.
Yeah, you can't have that. I'm not. I guess unless everybody's tested, but that seems like an epidemiological nightmare. I feel for the athletes. It sucks. I mean, you know, you train. This is your sort of, especially the ones non-revenue sports. You train your whole life, let's say, you know, to be like a steeplechase runner or in kayaking or canoeing, and you know, a global pandemic hits. It sucks. All right, finally, you know, I did promise John on Twitter that we would do a ranking of the sports television public relations departments. Of course, I only did that, John, just to see who would text you about it, freaking out about that potential. So I was just trying to fuck with people. But I do want to ask a PR question here. All right, in the and this is where you'll get your diplomacy hat on, because I know you never like to only sunshine and applesauce with you when it comes to the PR departments. Do you think it's in 2021? What story do you want to sell into the market? Like, as a general rule, for the ESPNs and the Foxes and the CBSs and the NBCs, are you trying to sell how you're building up your streaming division, you know, like ESPN Plus and NBC are? You know, once upon a time, ESPN, I know you were part of this. You remember when Josh Krulowitz and Vince Doria would go to the AP and all these other stuff? They used to pitch how ESPN was a journalistic power and look at outside the lines they're on every day, et cetera. You know, ESPN doesn't like it when me and Jim Miller talk about, you know, far less journalism happening at ESPN. But that's not as easy a story to sell anymore, John, just given how many layoffs they've had. So what do you sell? I mean, what do you sell? What's a good story for a sports PR? Like, do you sell viewership? Well, hard to sell viewership in a COVID year when everything's down. What do you sell if you're the Chris LaPlacas and the Jen Sabatels and the Greg Hugheses and the, who else haven't I mentioned, John?
You know, Andrew Figueresi is out there, right?
Yeah, Andrew Vic Verisi. I think I've gotten everybody.
Chris Legentil,
I've listed all members
of
the four families. Chris Legentil, do I put him into Nate Smeltz? Yeah, it's the member six families. There you go. Well done.
The story that
Although give Anna Negron a raise. You want to talk about talented PR people? But go ahead.
The story that that I would get out there is just that we have a plan. We know what we're doing. Ratings are pretty much down. It's not a great story with that. I wouldn't go whole hog in streaming because you have a huge amount of people that are still watching linear television. And I wouldn't go whole hog in linear television because you have a lot of people that are streaming. I just want to. I think the stories that resonate with my readers. Is when people come out and they have a plan. So Fox Sports does not have a streaming service, but they have a plan. They have a broadcast network, and they're stripping out the days of the week on the broadcast network with live events and live sports, and they're in the mix for all these rights deals that are moving forward. You have on the other side, you have ESPN. They have ESPN Plus, and they're seeding ESPN Plus with as much content as they can, and they still have ESPN, and they're now moving more into broadcast with ABC as well. They have a plan. I mean, so everybody, you just want to hear that people are taking a look at this really surreal market that we're in, inspired by COVID, inspired by an economy that's sort of on the edge, and they have a plan moving forward, not knowing. We all know where the media industry is going. It's going towards streaming. But we don't know what the timing is on it, and I think people want to know that the leaders at these networks that they know where it's going and they know when and they have a plan for it.
Yeah, that's a quality answer, John. Full marks to you. Way to go!
Off the cuff, that was great. I didn't prepare that, Richard.
Excellent, excellent. All right, John Orand is the fine media writer for Sports Business Daily and Sports Business Journal. Check him out on those sites. Check his newsletter out, which is excellent, and obviously follow him on Twitter. He's been on an excellent run of news breaking, and so we will follow his work very closely. John, as always, thank you for the time, and I will see you again soon on the Sports Media Podcast.
I hope so. Thanks, RD.
All right, back in the studio. My thanks, as always, to John Orand for some fun and interesting sports media conversation. If you like these podcasts, head to the Sports Media with Richard Deitch page on Stitcher, Apple, iTunes, Google Play. Leave us a 5-star review and a nice note if you could. That's how this podcast sticks around. Last couple episodes have been really good. Before the Orand episode, Rhiannon Walker, Britt Giroli, and Jane McManus on the Jared Porter story and the sexual harassment that they have each faced in the business. They were incredibly honest, and I would say probably one of the most important podcasts I've done in a long time, so I hope you check that out. For that, Noah Eagle on calling the Nickelodeon game for the NFL. Before that, James Andrew Miller on ESPN's future. Prior to that, Renee Paquette of wrestling broadcasting fame, known as WWE. It used to be known as Renee Young of the WWE. And Shalice Manza Young as well, who always writes a lot of interesting stuff for Yahoo Sports. And she discussed her column on Aqib Talib and his importance in sports broadcasting. I want to thank my producers, as always, Patrick Antonetti, Sean Cherry, for their help on this podcast. Not really help, they pretty much do everything on this podcast. And thanks, of course, to Cadence 13, to John McDermott, Chris Corcoran, Spencer Brown. Appreciate the support. We'll see you soon. Super Bowl coming up. Going to be a lot of sports, interesting sports media conversation. Look forward to bringing it to you. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next time on the Sports Media Podcast.